And thanks for downloading today's audiocast for Monday, July 2nd, 2007 from AvWeb, the world's premier independent aviation news resource. Brought to you today by IFR Refresher. I'm Mike Blakeney. In an interview with AvWeb Editor-in-Chief Chad Trotvetter, AOPA Vice President of Government Affairs Andrew Cibula explains the highlights of the FAA reauthorization bill introduced in the House of Representatives late last week. According to Cibula, AOPA endorses this legislation, warts and all.
Well, we were actually pleased that the House Transportation and Infrastructure Committee has actually approved the legislation so that it's now clear to be paired up with a couple of other elements. One will be the tax provision, and the other one will be the research and development provision, then brought to the House floor and hopefully passed. And we endorse the bill because it meets several very important goals that the association has. Number one, it continues to use excise taxes to fund the majority of the FAA's programs, as well as the general fund contribution from taxpayers across the country to support part of the aviation system. It does have an inflationary adjustment on both avgas and jet fuel, which was something that that we were kind of prepared for, something that, like any tax, you don't want to support it, but you can accept it. It's a 5 cent a gallon increase on aviation gasoline, and I believe it's an approximately 10 cent a gallon increase on jet fuel. Jet fuel goes from 21.8 up to 30.7 cents a gallon. Avgas goes from 19.3 to 24.1 cents.
Now, there's some other increases in service fees in this bill as well, too, right?
I would refer to those as transactional charges, and those are charges that some exist today at a very, very low level. For instance, right now it costs $5 to register an airplane. The House bill would take that up to $130. Replacing an aircraft registration would go from $2 up to $45. There will be a fee for an airman certificate, which is not something we've seen before. Some of the magnitude of these charges are not something that we like, but quite frankly, when you look at the overall bill, we've endorsed it because it rejects user fees and it continues to embrace aviation excise taxes as the way to fund the aviation users' contribution to the overall system.
Let's get into what this bill actually will fund. Can you talk about funding levels for different programs?
I think one of the big things for pilots across the country is the investment that's made in airports. And right now, the FAA spends about $3.6 billion. This legislation would, in the first year of the bill, take it up to $3.8 billion. And then by the fourth year, the final year of the bill, it would be at $4.1 billion. That's a nice increase in funding for airport development. And, of course, it will continue to finance development at general aviation airports. That's absolutely crucial. Of course, it continues to fund the modernization of the air traffic control system. There'll be a lot of details as to how that money is actually spent across the system. But it's increased over $1 billion to what the FAA had actually proposed over the life of the bill, which is very important. It also has some specific language that we thought was important about flight service stations, because as pilots know, that's an area right now that we've really, quite frankly, had some problems with as Lockheed Martin, as the FAA's contractor for that service, has gone to modernizing their system and instituting some consolidations and some refurbishments of existing sites. And so there's some specific language in there that calls for the FAA to improve on its oversight of Lockheed Martin. They also have to get back with Congress and tell them why things broke down the way they did and the steps that the FAA and Lockheed are taking to improve it. So we think that that's important, as well as there's some language about the ADS-B program that the FAA is currently working on which will be a very important part of the shift that's being made from the current radar system to a system that will have less reliance on radar and more using the global positioning system for aircraft to identify to ATC where they are.
And there's also some language about improved pilot licenses. How does AOPA feel about this provision in the House bill?
After 9/11, it became very apparent that matching up the pilot's picture onto a pilot certificate was going to happen, and it was an important thing from a security and quite frankly a perception of security. And so we actually had petitioned for pilots to have to carry a government-issued picture ID. The FAA has embraced that in rulemaking in 2002. And so a natural progression is the idea that the FAA will actually issue pilot certificates with the picture. Now, the big problem in that is not the fact that they're going to do it, but it's how they do it. And we've been working with the FAA for several years now and also with Congress, ensuring that the FAA could use designees, because the idea that we have had is a designee like such as an aviation medical examiner could be the conduit so that the pilot's picture could be sent by the AME to the FAA rather than a pilot having to actually go to an FAA facility. That's just logistically presents a real problem. So it's not the idea of the picture being on the pilot certificate that's an issue. The big issue is how you actually make that happen. And of course, in the year 2007, with the technology that we have today, we're hoping to be able to work with FAA to come up with an easy way so that it's not a burden for the pilot.
I imagine in that respect, the state driver's license facilities would be a good place to start, right?
I think that right now the FAA's approach has been to use designees. Again, the AME might be one. It might be the testing centers. I think they're going to allow multiple designees to be conduits or facilitators for getting the photo to the FAA.
Now, there's also some language in here about mixing unmanned aircraft systems into the current mix of commercial manned airplanes. What does AOPA think about this?
It's been an issue that, quite frankly, we've been very involved with and had actually requested language be included in the legislation, because UAVs, or unmanned aerial systems, as they're sometimes referred to now, is definitely a growing area. You have them both within the government, with Department of Defense, Department of Homeland Security, as well as, of course, commercial opportunities that may exist. And so pushing the FAA to have the standards for both the vehicles themselves as well as how they will be incorporated into the aviation system is really crucial. The big concern for AOPA members is having them incorporated into the system so that obviously they're safe, but that they also don't require the use of temporary flight restrictions, because I don't know if you recall, but last year when the CBP, the Customs Border Protection, when they wanted to have UAVs part of their patrolling of the southwestern border, they had, I think it was something like 316-mile long temporary flight restriction down there. And so that's just not acceptable for the aviation system. So one of the big issues is to have the FAA move as quickly as possible in developing the regulatory framework that they're going to need to be able to have UAVs operate in the system and obviously operate safely.
Now, there's also a provision on the Washington, D.C. Air Defense Identification Zone, or ADIS. What's that about?
As you probably are well aware, and certainly pilots across the country know, the Washington ADIS has really presented problems for the pilots operating in the Washington, D.C. area. And what the Congress has included in the bill is a requirement for the FAA to come back to Congress within 90 days with a report that really identifies ways that they could decrease the operational problems that pilots are experiencing. And so we felt like that was something that was very important, that some additional pressure be placed on FAA and then, of course, the agencies that are really the ones that are driving the FAA to on the ATIS, which are the Department of Homeland Security and Department of Defense. So we're hoping that that reporting requirement is going to help shake loose some relief that pilots in this area really need.
Now, as the bill goes through the House, there's a companion Senate bill that's quite different. What kind of timeline are we going to see, you know, the House to get this a floor vote and the same one as Senate, and then obviously they'll have to go in a conference? And what's the priority here for both houses of Congress?
When it comes to prognosticating Congress, I almost wonder if you're not better off trying to flip a coin at this point. But just to at least give a couple of ideas on the framework, first of all, I would think that the House will be taking up the financing section of the bill when they return after the July 4th recess. So there'll probably be some kind of a hearing in the Ways and Means Committee, and then they'll be moving the bill to the floor. The House, which has much tighter rules how they're going to bring legislation to the floor, they could certainly do it in the month of July. But when the bill was being considered in committee yesterday, there were two provisions that were voted on and inserted into the bill, one dealing with the air traffic controllers, really sending the FAA and the air traffic controllers back to the negotiating table. That provision is contentious. It's contentious during the debate yesterday. So should the FAA and the air traffic controllers be able to reach some sort of an agreement, then that would certainly facilitate the legislation moving through Congress. If they don't, then that's going to certainly raise some big questions. The other provision had to do with Federal Express and how their employees can unionize and be represented. In the Senate, on the other hand, the Senate Finance Committee has tentatively scheduled a hearing for the middle of the month. I think it's July 12th right now. I don't know that it's specifically scheduled, but that's been kind of the target date. But the Senate, of course, has the user fee, and AOPA is committed to fighting that user fee on the floor of the Senate if we need to. And so that legislation could be a lot more contentious. And so at this point in time, I'm really, and as an organization, we're really unclear as to what's going to happen in the Senate before the August recess. So we'll know more in a couple of weeks on that. But for right now, we just know that we've got a fight ahead because we have got to get that user fee removed from that bill.
Now, we're winding down to the September 30th deadline for FAA reauthorization. That basically that would strip the FAA of collecting the fuel tax and ticket tax. Are we going to make it by that deadline? I mean, you know, to get these two bills through and then have a conference committee hash out the differences?
At just about the time you think you have seen everything, Congress finds new ways to make things happen and sometimes make things not happen. So I'd be better able to answer the question in about 4 weeks, because by then we'll have seen how the House is going to proceed on its legislation, kind of where things stand in the Senate, and then it will be a little clearer as to what may happen. As an organization, we don't want to see the taxes expire, and we would like to be able to have legislation approved by Congress and enacted before the September 30th expiration of current law. At times, what Congress has done is they've done essentially like a bridge a piece of legislation where for a temporary period of time, maybe 30 days, maybe 90 days, something like that, they'll extend the taxes and the spending. So it's really a little bit early yet to talk about what's going to happen as we approach to September 30th. But I think everybody across the industry is working hard right now to see if we can't get legislation approved before the current one expires.
AOPA Vice President of Government Affairs, Andrew Sabula. AvWeb.com, now with more general aviation news delivered more often in a more reader-friendly format. Check us out at www.avweb.com. Comments on this audiocast welcome at audionews@avweb.com. And this report was brought to you by IFR Refresher, packed with strategies and tactics from some of the nation's top CFIIs, airline captains, and corporate pilots who fly the system every day and really know what makes it tick. Check it out at www.ifr-refresher.com. Look for AvWeb's next audiocast on Friday, July 6th. I'm Mike Blakeney for AvWeb Audio. Thanks for listening.